excellent. I'm concerned about a couple factors. The fact that Oregon and several counties has what I think is an excessive remand history. And I'm not sure how best to deal with that, except to very clearly state that we are not going to permit remand unless it's clear that the kind of conduct, the UUD felonies, are so serious as to, I think, warrant that kind of treatment. I'm also very concerned about the point that Mr. English and others have made, that we are sending what appears to me maybe some very hard to reconcile policy choices. First of all, we're talking about substantially downsizing McLaren, and some individuals have even talked about shutting down that facility completely and combining its operations with Hillcrest in one facility. How we're going to accomplish that and yet persist with what I consider to be an extraordinarily and inappropriately high remand rate, I don't know. I think the only way to get at that is to limit significantly the kinds of offenses to prevent what I think is an arbitrary application of remand to only those most serious offenses, which I think pose a real danger to community and individuals. Representative Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the question that I would have, looking at, okay, now we're down to, up to age 15. If a 15-year-old who had been remanded, well, I guess my concern is, can we take into consideration, for example, in we're talking the age of, 16, 17-year-olds?
We are talking the 15-year-olds, there are only certain categories of offenses for which they can be remanded. I'm talking the 16 and 17-year-olds, yes. Only the A and B felonies.
Now, in your conceptual motion, then...
Let me add to that. I would include an attempt at an A or B felony as well. Let me clarify that.
I guess my concern is, suppose that a juvenile has a previous record of that showed serious offenses, and it just happened that the offense that we happen to pop them on, him or her on this time, is not an A or B felony. Even though they had a very serious record prior to this, they still could not be remanded unless the crime that they had, that they were being tried for, was an A or B felony.
That's correct.
Well, Sharon, I guess my concern there is that there are times when there are some juveniles you want to, or some defendants in general that you want to get whenever you can get them, simply because you happen to catch them on something that is not an A or B, that may not be a total indication that they don't deserve the more serious treatment. So I guess I would have to oppose that on those grounds if my concerns are as I stated.
Okay. Are there any other comments or discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Hill?
No.
Betsy?
Aye.
Miller?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
No.
Springer?
Aye. Motion fails. Okay, are there any other motions on amendments to the bill? Okay, though the chair personally would probably be in favor of going down the list of amendments, I'm anticipating that the result could well be the same as the last amendment. So rather than, I think, take the time to go through that exercise, unless members individually indicated a specific desire or request to deal with some of the other issues raised by the ACLU and in their amendments, which personally I could support, unless members are willing to take up any of those amendments or any other amendments at this time, and unless there's some individuals who have not yet had a chance to comment, who wish to comment further at this point, in light of the action taken by the committee, guess a motion on the bill as amended would be appropriate. Representative Kopetsky?
Yes, there is one, and that I was a clear note to me, and I'm sorry I left my bill file on the floor, but the change that ACLU has suggested in line 7 of the bill, Circuit Court of Competent Jurisdiction. Let me suggest a change in that amendment in it, so that it would be to the Circuit or District Court of Competent Jurisdiction.
Do you want to state that motion
yes.
again, Representative Kopetsky?
Let me look at the original bill. It would be in line 7 of the bill. After circuit, delete the comment, insert or. After district, delete the comma, justice or municipal. So the line would read to a circuit or district court of competent jurisdiction.
Okay, Representative Kopetsky moves that line 7 and in that on page 1 in that section that we delete the reference to justice or municipal court. And I.
Not
is
sure.
That the only place, Representative? Why don't you state the purpose of the motion and then
with the intent of deleting where appropriate justice or municipal court in the remand area. People under.
Chair.
Representative Peterson.
Could I ask a question?
Sure.
What's the practical effect of that? What are you actually doing in terms of remanding or not remanding the child?
The issue of remand would be before a circuit or district court. If there's a justice court, for example, and no district court, then it would be done in the circuit court.
So that means perhaps in another community, a nearby community, if there's no...
Some communities have a justice court, right. No district court, but a circuit court. So in that community, it would be at the circuit court. But some communities have a district court and a justice court, and so it would be at the district court.
Okay. Thank you.
That's why the word competent jurisdiction is applicable.
Okay, Representative Kopetsky, you don't intend to affect any of the blanket remands that may exist, do you?
That's correct.
Which are generally ordered by a circuit court.
That's right.
Hunting and fishing, voting, traffic violations.
Right.
Okay. Is everyone clear on the nature of the amendment or its purpose? Are there any questions about the nature of the amendment? Yes, Senator Riles, why don't you come forward, please?
Yeah, that's existing language. We haven't changed that at all, and I just wanted to be sure whenever we amend this bill, sometimes then you've got to make sure you've amended another section of the juvenile statutes as well. And I guess I couldn't hear your explanation, Mike, for why you wanted that. Excuse me, Representative Kopetsky, why you wanted that out. In all the discussions, I've never heard that. But what was the...
I guess my reason is that in terms of the seriousness of types of crimes, I'd be more comfortable with people with legal education making these types of decisions.
Yeah, I think that would always happen with these kinds of crimes. Anyway, I do, this whole section and the whole criteria sets up for all remand. And I guess the only reason, if something would ever be done in this area, I'd like to have the criteria apply everywhere. And this is the section that deals with where the criteria applies. And I guess it seems to me the broader where the criteria is used, the better, because that isn't the section that deals with who's remanded. It deals with when you're remanded, what the court has to look at. That's my only concern. I think we're both saying the same thing.
Yes.
I'm not sure if I want to narrow where they have to use that criteria.
Right. Well,
Yeah, Representative Kopetsky, it's your intent to...
I'm not sure that it wouldn't...
I understand what you're saying.
I guess that's more for lawyers to argue about. I just like the broadness of it. Whenever you remand anybody, anywhere, in any court for anything, you've got to consider all those things when you do it.
Representative Kopetsky?
Maybe I should just withdraw the motion.
Representative Kopetsky, if you wish to present that issue at full committee, you may do so after a chance to research the subject.
Okay.
Okay, Representative Kopetsky wishes to withdraw his motion. Is there any objection? Not, it's withdrawn. Are there any further motions on the bill or amendments? Representative Phillips?
I'd like to move Senate Bill 414 engrossed as amended to full committee. Pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Phillips moves Senate Bill 414A engrossed as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? If not, the clerk will call the roll.
Hill?
Aye.
Kopetsky?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye. Motion's adopted. It'll be up Wednesday for full committee work session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Thank you to Senator Ross and all the folks who've come down and spent time working with us on this issue.
Mr. Chair, could I ask you how many would you like to have there for the full committee? Wednesday at 1:30?
I'm not going to ask that anyone be here, although there may be at least one amendment presented, and there is always the possibility there may be others.
It's kind of, I'm more responding to what you feel the other committee, how deeply you feel the full committee is going to want to go into this, and you want to have Mr. Hughes here and for the statistical information, perhaps Mr. Meisenheimer here for the application information. Is it necessary to bring in all the other supportive?
I don't think it's necessary to bring in everyone. I really am at a loss to state who should or shouldn't be here. I would tend to err on the side of fewer rather than more.
Well, we're all working under this press, and so I appreciate the time you've given to the bill, but I also feel that you've all heard the bill. We'll just have him here then at 1:30.
Not on my account. Yeah. I don't want to feel responsible for bringing all these people down.
No, I guess I need to hear from the other committee members. Do they need any more statistical information? Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Okay, I would like to, if we can, try to take some action on 3030 and 3022. Perhaps moving them to full committee, if subcommittees ready to do that. Let's try 3030. Representative Hill has indicated that although he may not be able to join us here personally, he is ready to just proceed with the quote Son of Sam provisions, which are sections 3 and 4 of the bill, and is willing to give up the new crime category or aggravated crime category to certain classes of victims. And so if there's desire in the committee to move on sections 3 and 4, pursuant to Representative Hill's instructions, we'll delete sections 1 and 2,
Mr.
or would in work session. Representative Kopetsky?
I'd move motion to hold all the lead lines 5 through 16.
Oops. 4 15. Through 15.
15.
Okay, Representative Kopetsky moves deletion of lines 4 through 15 of House Bill 3030 in the printed bill. Is there further discussion? Is there any objection? If not, it's adopted. Representative Kopetsky?
I move House Bill 3030 as amended to the full committee's due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Kopetsky moves House Bill 3030 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Okay, if not, the clerk will call the roll.
Hill?
Aye.
Kopetsky?
Aye.
Miller?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
For purposes of full committee consideration, aye. 3022. Council?
All right, I'd like to advise the committee that you have three sets of amendments before you, and one of them was presented to me earlier today. It's by the League of Oregon Cities. I don't believe you've had testimony on it, and I really haven't had a chance to chat with Mr. Neal, who presented the amendments. The second set of amendments are offered by Mr. Castagna to take care of the educational concerns that we discussed last time in the committee. I'll be handing out a copy of those amendments. They also include the amendments that were drafted by legislative council for the hospital. People representing the hospital that were concerned about this issue.
Okay, so 3022-2 includes 3022-1?
Yes. In addition, Mr. Chairman, there is a set of amendments proposed by Mr. Gary from the Department of Justice that I don't believe the committee's had a chance to go through or comment on.
Say again, those amendments?
The amendments offered by Mr. Gary from the Department of Justice that were suggestions that arose out of a discussion between Mr. Gary and Mr. Rex Armstrong when they asked the ACLU to make the bill sounder in a constitutional sense.
Okay, have we had LC prepare the amendments prepared by the Department of Justice?
No, we have not.
Okay, Mr. Castagna, Mr. Patterson, do you want to come forward and speak to the amendments that I think there's been some collaboration on the amendments, is that correct?
Yes, there has been.
Okay.
Ed Patterson with the Oregon Association of Hospitals. I believe Mr. Fleischer testified on behalf of the hospitals at your last hearing regarding this bill. We have no position regarding the public policy question regarding the bill. However, there are a number of small hospitals in the state that simply do not have the bench strength from a management standpoint that are affiliated and networking with larger hospitals. Some of the larger hospitals are religious-based institutions, and the smaller hospitals are signing management contracts with them. And the way the bill is constructed currently, in those situations, those smaller hospitals would not then be eligible for any state funds, such as reimbursement from the welfare Medicaid situation. So at least part of the amendments in Dash 2 address that issue. I think my colleague has another half of those amendments.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Bob Castagna, Oregon Catholic Conference. The examples that I gave the committee when I testified the last time have been incorporated in the amendments drafted. And there was a technical correction to the amendments numbered 3022-2, and they've come back as 3022-3. They had repeated some of the language, and they just cleaned up the grammatical errors in the second set of amendments. And these would take care of charitable organizations, private schools, and private and independent institutions of higher education.
Lipson Kopetsky.
Mr. Castagna, there are some school districts that this has been tested constitutionally that allow school districts, for example, here's a specific example, kids that go to Catholic schools ride the school bus. The school bus can stop at the Catholic school. This bill in any way prohibit that activity?
It would be my intention through these amendments to make sure that it does not.
Okay.
Okay, Mr. Patterson or Mr. Castagna, can you advise me if you've had a chance to review these amendments with the prime sponsor, Representative Klobuchar?
I have not. I presented a copy of the amendments to Mr. Farbush's aide, Bruce, and he said he had no problems.
Okay. I'm ready to go ahead and take action on those amendments, subject to any expression of reservation or subsequent disapproval by the prime sponsor. I'm assuming that there probably will not be, if I understand the intent. Clearly, in speaking with the sponsor, I don't believe his intent was to apply to any of the organizations that you gentlemen represent. So I feel comfortable at this point proceeding with that amendment, and the chair would move adoption of the LC amendments to House Bill 3022-2, bearing the date 6685. Is there further discussion? Is there any objection to those amendments? Not, they're adopted. Council.
Yes, I'd like to advise the committee, and just for the clarification of the record, we do have a later amendment than the one you have in front of you. That's House Bill 3022-3, marked June 7th, 85. The ones you have in front of you are just the same. I just made a quick deletion of materials in that particular amendment that are not included in the final copy. So they're exactly the same. They're just like a little different. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Let's say, Phillips?
I've read through very briefly. I will add the legislative amendments proposed by the Department of Justice. I've got a few copies of them before we act. You plan to send it on to LC to see what happens?
Well, I would have liked to have done that, but apparently...
Well, you can, and I'll come back at full committee if I haven't solved my problems.
Correct. Council?
I'd like to suggest that we go through these amendments offered by the Department of Justice, and I'd like to make a comment on them. I have looked at them and worked with Mr. Gary and Mr. Wunter and also Representative Farbush, and I had some comments on the amendments themselves after they were drafted by Mr. Gary. Mr. Armstrong was going to be here today. I had two messages on my desk, and we were unable to connect, so I don't know why he isn't here at this point in time to discuss these with the committee. But what I'd like to do is draw your attention to the first amendment at the top of that page. This is on page 2 of the printed bill, line 4. Basically, that amendment would include, instead of just a religious institution, it would also include religious institutions, and that's what that language is designed to achieve. Then the subcommittee heard testimony that they might want to consider removing, assisting in the alleviation of a detriment in line 9, and so that's what that particular amendment goes to. And then in the bottom of the on page 2, if you read this language, it talks about an investigation by the governor to determine whether monies are being dispersed to a religious institution. Well, there's also language in the bill that talks about a rebuttable presumption, and it was clear in reading this part of the bill that nothing had been set up to, nothing in the bill really has been designed to set up a contested hearing or to allow a hearing. There was just going to be a rebuttable presumption, but no actual hearing to determine who was going to rebut the presumption. So this language at the bottom of page 1 goes to that problem. And it says, upon investigation, the governor concludes that there is reason to believe that the political subdivision is controlled by a religious institution. The governor shall notify, first of all, notice an opportunity to be heard, which takes care of your due process problem. The governor shall notify the political subdivision and any other interested persons who have requested notice. I'd like to suggest that you look at the way that's written. The only people who get notice are the political subdivision and people who've asked for notice, and I would suggest to the committee that a better way to write that is to say that the governor will notify the political subdivision and interested parties. Otherwise, you won't even know about it unless you've asked for notice of it.
Who are interested parties?
Well, I suspect that it would be people that work for the political subdivision and who may be affected by the governor's order.
I think we have to do better than that.
I agree with you, but what I'm just suggesting that the way it is now, you might not get notice at all because you haven't asked for it. So it needs to be drafted more broadly to include people that be anticipated to be affected by the governor's action. That's a suggestion.
Okay. Well, let me. Members are going through these amendments and right to raise questions. I think that's certainly more than appropriate. Is Mr. Neal or someone here from the League of Oregon Cities to discuss their amendments? I think basically he wants to delete the language in Section 7, as I understand it. Does that appear to be correct? I think takes out a large part of the bill. Yeah, rather than force action this evening, but in order to get some action on this before full committee on Wednesday, we could carry this over till tomorrow in order that council can discuss the rewrite she feels is appropriate in terms of notice with the Attorney General. And I'd like to be able to work through this work session with the assistance of someone from the Attorney General's office as well as the ACLU, because I know they have expressed a concern about the bill in its entirety, and I think there's somewhat of a loss in subcommittee without those parties present. Is there some reasonable assurance, Council, that if we schedule this for tomorrow, we can go ahead and have someone from the Attorney General's office and someone from the ACLU, as well as Representative Favish or one of his representatives here at the Annual League of Oregon Cities, so we can take action with the benefit of their presence and advice?
Mr. Chair, are we discussing a daytime meeting, or are we talking about a nighttime meeting?
Day or night.
Because, as you're aware, Subcommittee 2 has a very full agenda tomorrow.
Day or night.
I could ask someone from the Department of Justice, Mr. Armstrong, if they could appear tomorrow evening.
Well, they can appear tomorrow during the day. We set aside a special time for them. And Subcommittee 2's work will have to continue in the evening if that's going to be necessary. It may well have had to do that in any event. Per Chair's earlier notice, all members of the committee as far as the work sessions this week. Members will recall I've asked everyone to sort of not commit the evening hours. For example, today we received 9 new bills in the committee, Senate bills. So we have got our work cut out for us in subcommittees this week, whatever we do on 3022. I just, before I follow that course, which I think at this point is probably more advisable than trying to gallop through this right now, I want to see if there are any other questions that we should pose to Council or ask her to pose in turn to either Representative Favish or to the Department of Justice or to the League of Oregon Cities or to the ACLU. Council?
May I suggest one other area that the committee might want to think about, and that is that the way these amendments are written, it says that the governor's designee will make the determination. Basically, what that means is that instead of appointing either a circuit court judge or a hearings officer from another agency or from the Department of Justice to hear the issue and make a determination, the way this language is written, it would be the governor or someone from the governor's office making that determination. I would suggest to you that under administrative law principles, that an agency can prosecute, can investigate, and do a variety of things, but they can't both prosecute and judge at the same time. The way it's written right now, I think the bill might run afoul of administrative law principles.
Well, equating this to prosecution, I think, is a little off point. I'm aware that the Workers' Comp Department, the Employment Division, the PUC, all have administrative law judges who conduct investigations and reach certain findings of fact even by employees of those respective departments.
Perhaps prosecute's the incorrect term, Mr. Chair. I'm talking about investigation and then advocating the facts that are found and then judging those facts all within one department.
Well, is this...
Is the penalty money?
We're not talking about, you're turning an executive function to a judicial function, which is going to be reviewed by the courts in any event, I assume. What's the process for judicial review in this? Any person that appears to be a fact may appeal in the manner as under the APA, which is how anyone else appeals any other administrative determination, which how I view this action. Personally speaking, I certainly could be corrected on that, but it seems like any other executive agency type function. rather than bringing the judiciary into it.
I was suggesting judiciary, Mr. Chair. I was suggesting perhaps that some of the Department of Justice, the Human Office from that branch, or from that agency, might be more appropriate than somebody right from the Attorney's Office.
Well, I don't know if the Department of Justice has hearings officers. Counsel, that's fine if you want to explore that with whoever you wish, because we can all benefit from that exercise. But I assume the governor, in designating a hearing officer, may choose someone from the staff. He could choose his own legal assistant, could choose someone else from the executive department, could appoint somebody from a former judge, could appoint anybody, I assume, to quote serve as a hearing officer. But that's an issue that we probably ought to invite the response of those parties who have appeared previously. And I'd be glad to do so. Are there any other kinds of instructions?